Hello and welcome to the Open Air Podcast. My name is Devang Desai and I'm joined as always by Mr. Simon Bushell. Bush, the fates conspired against us. Your home country, England, conspiring against us. You still haven't left. You're still there.
Can't get enough of it. Love being in the UK, Dev. Eventually I will make my way back to Canada. By next week when I record, I will be in Vancouver again.
Please, please tell the listener, who I think they should know how dedicated we are to this show and producing this show, because I think this might be the most harrowing journey for one podcaster to get this show out the doors. But you were supposed to leave on Friday. You didn't. Do you want to run through a Cole's notes of what happened?
All right. So I turn up at the airport at Heathrow and obviously I've filled out all my details. It's a bit of an odyssey to travel to, especially internationally at the moment, just given the way that everything works. So turn up at the airport, show all my documentation and show negative COVID tests along with a vaccination passport and all this sort of stuff. And the gate at British Airways tells me that, no, in fact, you're not allowed on the plane because the government of Canada does not recognize the test results from the National Health Service here in Britain. So I was rejected to come onto the flight and told politely to go and get a different PCR test by a private provider, which after doing some digging and after spending a good hour and 30 minutes on the Government of Canada website, I discovered was in fact the law, and it was my own fault. But who would have thought the official test of the National Health Service doesn't get you into Canada? So there's a lesson for everyone.
The more you know. I know, shocking when you told me that, because I assumed as the national health provider it would work, but that sucks. Wow. And traveling in COVID times, I think this is a classic example of that. But you are coming home soon. Extra time in London. Extra time, knock on wood. I'm knocking on a lot of wood as I record this because I am superstitious. But you'll be home soon. You got a couple more days in London. You got the vibes of Anthony Joshua gearing up for his fight in which he got smacked. We'll talk about that a bit later. But there was a lot of tennis this week, sir. We had real tennis and fake tennis. And I know people get a bit mad when we call the Laver Cup fake tennis, but still excellent. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It is.
It's still an exhibition, right? It is, and I think we'll talk about this right off the hop. The Laver Cup is over for another edition. Europe has won for the fourth consecutive time. 14-1, I believe, was the final count. They're going to play these dead rubbers now to close out, but it was not close at all. And I think the actual action on the court, there was some good stuff, but I think we got the juiciest stuff when Alexander Zverev apparently was talking trash about how Denis Shapovalov and John Isner's doubles point would be the only one that Team World would get. The Team World bench heard about this and started to talk about it. We have the clip now.
That's the last point we're going to win.
He also said he's innocent.
So a couple of things here, Bush. I think it's, I think the way they're talking, we have not heard any player really talk about Alexander Zverev in this way about these allegations since it's happened. I think Milos Raonic doing that interview with Rolling Stone was one thing, but we haven't really heard them talk off the cuff about this. So that was jarring. And two, didn't really care for like the joking aspect of bringing that in. But the best part of the Laver Cup is this kind of stuff. And I'm curious what your thoughts were watching that with John McEnroe and Riley Opelka and these guys talking about this.
Well, there's two distinctive sides to this, isn't there? There's the Alexander Zverev accusations and Riley Opelka's comments. And then there's the other side of it, which is just a question of how much we enjoy listening to the players talk and the atmosphere of the Laver Cup. And I think they certainly have something here. I think we've said that a few times that we've covered it as well, which is there's clearly something in this format and clearly something in the way that you hear this unfiltered aspect of the players talking to each other, which is really kind of fascinating and a sense that you don't really get of the tennis calendar in many ways. So that side of it, I think, is really cool and really interesting and something that we can dig into more. On the Opelka side of it, I think you said it well, which is that we don't really care for the joking aspect of it too much, but there is a lot to be gleaned from such a very small clip into the way that some members of the tour clearly view Alexander Zverev and how he's thought of, which you don't want to play too much armchair psychologist or speculator on this, but you don't tend to have a situation where someone who is beloved by his colleagues and peers is made fun of in such stark remarks by someone who is also on the tour. So I thought it was really, really interesting to hear that. Riley Opelka, man, the guy is cold-blooded, is he not? It must be all that curly hair, my curly-haired brethren. It was very jarring, but also very interesting.
Bush's body double, Riley Opelka. Exactly that. And I think that's it. Like John McEnroe commenting like that. Like, this is a guy who's been doing his matches like the last year where he doesn't mention any of this stuff, right? And it's like, oh, it's almost like he's remembering that when it's mentioned, which I think it is useful in that aspect, right? Like, it feels like, I don't know, Mary Carrillo resigned from her position broadcasting the Laver Cup because she wasn't down with how the tournament was representing itself in terms of the Zverev stuff. And I thought that was extremely commendable. And I think this entire week, it's been a lot of like dancing around it or not acknowledging it and enjoying some of the action. I enjoyed Berrettini-Felix a lot. I was really into that match. And I think you're right. We do love a lot of aspects of it. But I think the entire awkwardness of this entire thing really, that clip kind of shows it, because from then on, I thought it wasn't the same, right? And I think also Europe just destroying Team World kind of added to that. But it got too real almost. And I wonder what the Laver Cup, is the Laver Cup trying to be this real? Because there is an avenue here to keep going and making some tweaks, which we'll talk about. But I wonder if this is a little too real for a sport that, I don't know, I think this sport really likes to insulate itself. So I'm curious if they're okay with this banter.
It's got to be one of the most spicy things I've heard on a tennis court in quite some time, right? If you think about it and start unpacking what's actually in such a short clip, it's pretty heavy.
Yeah.
Even though it's a joke and everything, it's pretty heavy. And it kind of goes full circle, just to close the point out on this, Dev. They know. Like all this other stuff that we talk about whether or not the players know about this sort of stuff or whether they have an opinion about it. They know. They obviously know. It's clear that they know. And this is an example of how it actually was spoken about. And if we don't think that players talk and players have an opinion about this, we are pretty much mistaken, quite heavily mistaken, because clearly it's known around the tour, is it not, that this is a problem, and many, many players probably have opinions about this. And I think you don't want to say that everyone feels the same way, because that would be ridiculous. You have no idea whether how players react and how they feel about that. But just that small glimpse suggests that there is a feeling on the tour when you have a group of players who sort of are all there, and their reaction is not one of utter horror, but more just like, well, I mean, he's kind of got a point, hasn't he?
Right. True say. The actual tennis, Bush, like this tournament, I got sucked back in because I was watching Jack Sock kind of coach Felix against Berrettini and telling him where to stand in some of those big second serves. And I think Felix was crouching up a little too much and getting too excited. Possibly he had like 6 breakpoint opportunities in the first set that he squandered. But Jack Sock's like, move back a bit, man. And I'm like, Jack Sock is a wonderful teammate, and I would not know that without the Laver Cup. He's a cool dude. So like, again, this tournament, even though there was a lot of stuff wrong, and I think the actual format is something that needs to be talked about, getting a glimpse into the mindset of a guy like Jack Sock, who has dated some pretty cool people. Like, I think we can confirm Jack Sock is a cool guy, Bush. Like, there's no debating it now.
All right. Sure. has he not made some dodgy comments on mask wearing and vaccines?
But I mean, he came around a bit on this, I think.
And, you know, most people wearing masks, well, even John Isner, right? Despite all of the things that could have been thrown in his direction with some of the support that he is allegedly given to some political parties in the United States, fully wearing a mask and fully being a good teammate as well. And also very, very angry at Alexander Zverev, which was, it made for a very fiery and very spicy match the pair of them had, and the doubles match. So I agree with you. Jack Sock seemed like a very cool teammate to have on board, as did, honestly, most of that Team World seemed like they're having a blast. It seemed like they're having a good time together and enjoying the atmosphere. And the same cannot be said for Team Europe, Dev.
Team Europe, the most awkward collection of guys hanging out together I've seen in some time. Like Feliciano Lopez, possibly a professor who had just shown up for a brief 1-hour lecture, I guess, is just lounging around there, enjoying that. But Medvedev and Tsitsipas not talking at all, really. And I think in the Berrettini match, you kind of saw them rally together, and Medi was like giving him some pointers, but yeah, it wasn't exactly the most rosy or warm relationship that we saw between Fed and Rafa and those guys. But let's talk about this. So like Fed showed up, and I think that was huge. And he talked to Jim Courier about his recovery and kind of laying down some expectations. But I think him showing up was a bit shocking. He was still on crutches. And I think this is maybe also trying to protect the brand of the Laver Cup, because I think a lot of people were wondering, what does this thing look like if Djokovic, Nadal, and Fed aren't there? But Fed was there. He watched it. They were going nuts for him, the crowd. I thought that was hilarious. Every time he was on the camera, he was with Roddick. But I'm curious if he also thought to himself, Bush, how should they tweak this? Like, what do you think they should do? Because I don't think this is going to change, like, the landscape of this, the men's game, for sure, not in the near future. Europe has the top five or six guys, straight up. And I think counting on a couple Canadians to kind of carry the load for the rest of the world who's slacking. Like, Australia's not doing well. America's not particularly doing well. So I'm curious, what do you think they should do?
Well, maybe they should recruit the world number one on the WTA side. That might help. Just a thought. Seems like there is some element of that that might come in useful. Also, it might be a useful thing to attract Naomi Osaka to your team as well. That might be another useful one. Maybe Serena Williams. All of these players that might actually come in useful in a competition like this. So that's one thing that I would advise that they might want to get on board with fairly quickly. One other quick point on this. Microphones. Access. It's really interesting. That's the one thing, again, like, everyone's going to forget that this exhibition happened. Everyone's going to forget that this tournament took place. You know what they're not going to forget? That clip. Yeah. They're not going to forget that clip.
Right.
And if your overriding memory is of the access that you get to the players, maybe you might want to lean into that a little bit.
And Amy last week was talking about it, our guest. They run it really well. Like, you can see how the Tony Gottsick and crew and like the people who are putting the show on, they know what they're doing. Like, they make this a spectacle. The court looks cool as hell. I think the crowd in Boston was pretty good. I'm curious what you thought. I thought they were better than I was expecting, to be honest.
No, I thought they were trash.
Really?
Honestly, I thought they were terrible. They basically did not look like they got into the spirit of it all. They went more nuts for Roger Federer appearing
they did.
For any of the matches.
They did.
Which I guess is kind of not surprising.
Though? Can you blame them, yeah, though? This is basically his thing. But no, that's fair. And you know, Boston. No love lost for Boston, so I'm down to trash them as well. But I don't know. I thought they might have peaked with that Felix Berrettini match, because I feel like if Felix had won the match, that might have been able to kind of turn things for this event going forward. Again, an exhibition doesn't really matter, but in terms of the future of this, add women. You put this graphic on our notes, Bush, but if you add the women to this, you're looking at Team World now adding Naomi Osaka, Leila Fernandez, Ash Barty, Serena Williams, Bianca Andreescu, Ons Jabeur, like, to name a few. There's a lot of people. And then on Team Europe, Sakkari would be Team Europe, right? With Swiatek.
Yeah.
Pliskova, Raducanu, Bencic, Sabalenka. Yeah, I had to get Bencic in there. Pretty good, right? And then on the back of this, I saw reports that the Davis Cup and the ATP Cup are talking about merging because they both realize that they've tanked each other kind of and made themselves redundant. I think for me, my idea for the Laver Cup, if they do not change to involve women as well, for which I don't think they will, because this seems weirdly firm for them and it's upsetting, but I don't think they'll change it, not at least for the O2 event in London. Do a draft. Just do a draft, and you have to get the co-captains as Fed and someone else. I think that's the solution. I know nationality and jingoism sell and people love cheering for the flag, and a bunch of the American guys are wearing American flags. But like, I think we're a bit beyond that now. And especially with tennis, where so many people like just people, that we can just make teams and make them a bit more even and have a better competition. I think that's the solution for next year, at least.
Well, I think that's dependent on what you see this event as. Whether or not you see this as a direct competitor to the Davis Cup, in terms of what the nationality and the competition. And in a lot of ways, they have pivoted and projected themselves as that, given the fact that the head-to-head matters and the fact that it is a recorded event, or the opposite side of it, or whether or not you believe this is an all-star event. akin to the NHL or the NBA or the Pro Bowl in that capacity in the NFL. And depending upon what you view this event as, your vision about how you're going to change it and the format will follow that. Because if it's a glorified all-star event, then like do what the hell you want. Like genuinely, it doesn't matter. You can have them play on blue clay or you can have them playing with flaming tennis balls. Like it doesn't matter. But if you want this to be an event that actually matters in the head-to-head and it's competitive, which from the sounds of it, they really want to lean into that, then it does matter. And your decisions and how you go about doing this really will matter for the future of how this event unfolds.
Like that's exactly it. They're caught in between. Like these matches shouldn't count. I don't know why they do. I it's like the legitimacy is being added. And I'm not saying that these matches took on the air of a classic EXO. They were trying. You could see that it mattered. So I can understand why some people are apprehensive to label them like every other exhibition, but we're stuck between a couple places, and because Davis Cup is a bit in shambles, because the ATP Cup basically kind of tanked the Hopman Cup, we are here and we are left kind of asking that. I didn't consider looking at it like an all-star game, Bush, but I think in reality, to get more competitive games, they might have to look at that way, because I don't see this changing in the near future. Then again, maybe that's being too down on the world, but I don't know if Lloyd Harris or Riley Opelka are going to be those guys to carry the torch going forward. So unless we want to see another 14-1 next year, might be time to do some all-star shenanigans.
That's right. Tennis with the Elam ending. I'm doing it for you people. Not too difficult. I guess that technically is a tiebreak anyway.
So yeah, I guess, yeah.
No need to worry about that.
Anything else Laver Cup-wise, Bush?
Courts, probably top five in the world. It's really good looking. It's a really cool event in terms of its presentation on television, some of the camera angles, a lot of the things they did. Even the suits at the start of it and the way the players are presented. Like you mentioned off the top, they know what they're doing. Like this is a team of very well-established professionals who are putting this thing together from a marketing. It's very slick and it gave us some interesting stuff. Again, we'll come back to this and say, the best thing about this event was the stuff that happened basically off the court. So the clips, the things that we don't usually get to see. So my advice, if you want the tennis to be better, then think about ways of doing that. And if you want to lean more into the other stuff, which is what I would advise you do, then get cameras everywhere and turn the damn mics on, because it was great.
And I'll add, it warmed my heart to see how much Johnny Mac and Bjorn Borg still care. And I think their presence is also one of the cool parts of this tournament. And I'm talking about making the captains Roger and Rafa, but in listening to Roger speak to Jim Courier about this event, you can tell how important it is to have Bjorn Borg and John McEnroe involved. And you can tell as well that Roger's been kind of obsessed with the legends of this game for a long time throughout his career. He always talks about them. He always references Rod Laver whenever he could. And obviously now we have the Laver Cup, but that's something that I find really interesting about Fed Bush, is that like he's always paying reverence to the game's greats.
Fascinating, isn't it? You wonder what the psychology behind that is, because it is a sport that does honor its champions very well in so many ways. Like you have bloody stadiums named after them, so it's not like this isn't a sport that isn't self-referential in a lot of ways. It's, we can come on to it in our next segment, but I went to go and visit the Wimbledon Museum, and there's some pretty amazing history within the sport, not just in the tennis side of things, but in the fashion side of things, in the social movement side of things, and the economic side of things, in terms of its forward thinking as a sport. So there's tons and tons to be proud of. And like, it's, I think there's a reason why we both love the sport and we get so frustrated by it in so many ways, is because there is still so much good stuff in there. And I guess in a funny way, the Laver Cup is a microcosm of that, right? Because there's still
perfectly
good stuff in there.
Exactly.
But it's also kind of shit at the same time. Exactly. So you're sort of like, oh, come on, do better.
It's like, really, guys? Are you telling me this with a straight face? And I'm still eating it up. I'm still eating it up because we got problems. But that's exactly it. That was the fake tennis. There was a bunch of real tennis to get to. Ostrava, Nur Sultan, Metz, all that coming up next on Open Era. Welcome Welcome back to the Open Air Podcast. Real tennis, yes, the controversial term we are giving to the actual ATP and WTA events, sanctioned events that took place this week. Friend of the show, well, I think we're just fans of hers, Annette Kontaveit winning on Ostrava. Huge win for her, beating Maria Sakkari in the final. Ostrava Bush has the three exclamation marks on the at the end of their name on the court, plus one of the best DJs on the tour, I reckon, in terms of what they were playing in between changeovers all week. Loved this tournament, but I loved who ended up prevailing, because I think Annette Kontaveit is kind of part of this group of players who are always around and who always are horrible outs for the people who end up winning slams or going deep in the bigger tournaments, and liking to see someone from Estonia make an imprint like this on the tour with their second title.
Right. I agree. Congratulations to Annette Kontaveit, because this is a big title and actually had a really good field in it. I think you know where I'm going on this, and I apologize. I'm sorry, everyone, because it's going to sound really harsh. I don't mean it. Is Maria Sakkari one of the biggest choke artists in tennis? Like, her record at the latter stages of tournaments is terrible for a player who is so good and is now ranked inside of the top 10. She has had some high, high profile meltdowns and basically lackluster performances in big moments. Her record of getting to the latter stages of tournaments is exceptional. It truly is exceptional, but cannot get the job done. Is there some Felix Auger-Aliassime here syndrome? And it sounds so harsh, right? Semi-final of the French, semi-final of the US Open in 2021. That's not a choke artist in some capacity. However, you could argue that she should have won both of those tournaments. It's very strange to me.
Exactly that. I think she's had a run of semifinals as well without getting to finals. This was a breakthrough in Ostrava as well, and you wanted to see her kind of have that chance. I think it was her first final since 2019. She had lost 9 straight semifinals, just to back up that claim. Sadly, I think you're right. And again, this is not to say like Felix will never find it or Maria will never find it. But at this current juncture, there's clearly a mental block. And I think Annette Kontaveit is the last person you want to play when you're wanting to just get over the line, because the old cliche, she won't give anything to you. She won't. She really won't. And she played extremely well in this final as well. It was super tight in the second set. Could have gone either way. I think Sakkari takes that. We're looking at a different third set, obviously. But Annette Kontaveit kind of pushing back the fittest person in the tour at the end. Super impressive. Sakkari's kit, Bush, this tournament, awful. I don't know if it was camo on the skirt or some sort of pattern, but I was like, what the hell is this? It was bad. Conversely, Kontaveit's Lacoste kit, I thought was the best thing I saw that week in Ostrava. So if the shoe fits, it fit.
Look at you getting on board the fashion train. And
like, you inspired me.
My influence has seeped into you. I will just take one step back here and say quickly, both of us, enormous Maria Sakkari fans.
We are.
So it comes from a good place. This could just be the journey, right? Like, legitimately, she's up to a career high ranking of number 10. This could just still be her figuring it out. Like, players do get better, even at the age of 26. And she's never been this high before, and she's never been consistently to the stages where she's expected to win these tournaments. Maybe it does just take a little bit of extra time, but goodness me, there is a track record now that's starting to add up.
Hebe Hrkacz won his third title of 2021, front of the show as well. We just love this guy, beating Spanish bank PCB in straight sets at the Moselle Open in Metz. Big win for Hebe. I mean, third title of the year. I think we'll remember that win over Fed at Wimbledon as also another seminal moment. But the other big thing possibly to come out of this tournament is who Hebe Hrkacz had to beat on the way to the final. Andy Murray, looking like Andy Murray of a certain vintage, where we're no longer just like, oh, it's great to see him out there and he's having a good time. It's Andy Murray. We're like, how close is he, Bush? How close is he to winning some of these big matches against the likes of Hubert Hurkacz, who is an exceptional player right now?
Well, if you heard Andy Murray talk this week, he basically made it very clear that he's not out to be a top 100 player, like, because he made that position in the ranking, it became official this week that he was back into the top 100, and he was asked about it and basically said his goal is to come back to be a top 10 player. There are points that you see him on court and you really do see that he has the potential to get back to that level. You just find it very difficult to believe given all the body and the wear and tear that comes with it. But still, like, one of the smartest players in the whole tour, men's and women's, like someone who really understands the sport and the nature of it. But it's going to be really, really tough consistently to find that level, to get back to that stage where he wants to. I could see him winning another title at ATP tour level. I could absolutely see that.
For sure.
Could I see consistently getting inside of the top 10 again? I don't think so. It just seems like a step too far, but I'd be happy to be proved wrong on that.
I think I net out with you as well. Like over five sets, I do not see it. I think the Tsitsipas match, like with the weirdness involved as well, what was heartening was that he seemed there physically, but I just couldn't imagine him coming back a couple of days later and doing it again. You know what I mean? Whereas I think three sets is maybe a different animal, and you get to a European Open like he did a couple of years ago and you win that, right? You beat Stan Wawrinka. So I think it's ATP lower level is definitely doable, but let's walk easy a bit. Luke put this question in the Discord. Luke also pointed out about the Zverev tweet not showing up in Germany. It wasn't every article. Every Slate article that was shared in German Twitter it wasn't all of them that were blocked. It was just specific ones, which probably falls within some Twitter guidelines because we know they are arbiters of bullshit most of the time. But Luke asked us, Bush, who do you think makes bigger inroads at a slam next year? Andy Murray or Roger Federer?
Federer, I think.
I think it is Federer too. And it's and Luke's response to my answer was shocked and appalled, but I don't see it working out for Andy Murray as well as it might work out for Fed at a Wimbledon, where he gets the draw gods and he has completely back to some sort of level where he's better than he was last year and his knee is okay. But I don't see it likely for either of them, but I think it's more likely for Fed.
And he talked about it as well this week, right? Lost in all of the Laver Cup stuff that we forgot to mention is that he was interviewed and was seen on crutches as well and was talking about how his body felt and seemed, by all accounts, although you can read as many things as you want into a Roger Federer quote, because he's notoriously difficult to get a read on when it comes to his body and fitness levels, seemed pretty positive about everything and seemed like he was going to give it a go again. So if the dude is anywhere near fit and healthy and even like 80% of what he's capable of, can you not see that person making the fourth round of Grand Slam? I can easily see that.
I mean, he didn't really want to be there and he made it that deep to the French Open. Like, he accidentally made the fourth round. Dominic Comfort was probably the most pissed off man in Paris after that. But
if you go back and watch that, one of the strangest matches you'll ever watch.
Of all time.
Because they're both absolute trash. Like, it's an awful night that no one wants to watch.
And
there's no one there in the stands.
Because no one was there, it felt like the court was haunted. And perhaps it was, which, in all honesty. Okay. More tennis. Big shouts to Soonwoo Kwon, South Korea, beating Duckworth of Australia in straight sets at the Astana Open in Kazakhstan. Incredible haircut, incredible short. This fit was. We had some ballers fit wise at this tournament. Bunch of Aussies, John Millman showing out, but this fit was class, Bush.
It was certainly a look. You know, when you're like, you sort of look at someone in the fashion world or you watch a catwalk and you're like, you know what? I don't like it, but I respect it.
Exactly.
That's how I felt about this look.
The effort.
Yeah.
And then to go win. And then to go win it. Exactly, right? Like, if you have the hubris to attempt this, you better win. And I'm glad he did. But cool enough, it makes four. But before we get to the Astana Open court, so we praised Ostrava for the triple exclamation mark. I think you're not so kind to the folks at Astana here, Bush.
Did you agree with me that it looked like a word art court?
Okay.
I mean, it had been designed.
They had 3 to 5 minutes to get this done after forgetting about it. And they're like, we just need something that looks legible. It doesn't have to be beautiful. And they came up with that. It happens. We've seen it.
I mean, any more tacky and it would have turned into the UTS. Come on, people.
Patrick Mwartakolu taking bullets. Patrick Mwartakolu, why? Okay. So wait. Kwon is the 9th player to win their first ATP singles title this year. Bush, can you name the other 8? Some huge trivia here, because I have the names, but they're whited out. So can you name the 8 other first-time winners this year?
I am going to do my best. Okay. Ilya Ivashka.
Bang.
Because he won recently. Dan Evans won at the start of the year.
There's 2.
Who else? Alexei Popyrin.
Correct.
Popyrin? He won in Singapore, was it? I think he won in Singapore. That was right at the start of the year as well. Hurkacz wasn't, right? Hurkacz wasn't...
he won last year,
Sinner,
yeah.
Sinner won 2020, right? So Sinner's not on that list. Oh, Carlos Alcaraz.
Carlos Correct. Alcaraz
won his There's first four. World title.
Four left. Another countryman of yours on the UK side?
Oh, Cam Nori won. Yeah,
Cam Nori
won
his first title. Killa Cam Nori, of course. Three left.
Juan Manuel Cirandulo won.
He Amazing.
Won on
Correct.
Because we covered it on this podcast.
Two left. Two left, and they're probably the most obvious.
I don't know. No.
Go for it.
You're going to have to give me a hint. You're going to have to give
so,
me a hint.
So, okay. So, one of them is American, and he wasn't at the Labor Cup.
Did Sepp Korda win this year?
He did. He did win. Correct.
Okay. So Korda won this. I can't. Oh, is it Newport? Did he win? I think he won Newport, right?
You're putting me on the spot, but I believe so.
Oh, Thais Karatsev, of course.
Thais Karatsev. 8 for 8. I'm very impressed. Even with the hints, that is quite good. That is quite good. And I'm glad you got this right, because if we kept doing this show, we couldn't look ourselves in the mirror not getting this. But how about that?
We're pretty solid on this podcast of throwing each other trivia and actually getting it and not having to bullshit our way through. It's quite impressive.
It's good. It is good. So actually there is still some more real tennis. The Chicago tournament, the WTA is having, instead of, basically, I think this is like a replacement for the Asian Swing because they're not comfortable going back with COVID, et cetera. So they're going to have a tournament in Chicago that's frankly stacked beyond belief, Bush. Like, this might be one of the better tournaments of the year, and we still have Indian Wells left, but among the big stars that are going to be there, Kim Clijsters will be there too. And she's playing Shea in the first round in Chicago. Isn't that a perfect first round match? Welcome back, Kim.
God, can you imagine a worse person to look at the draw when you're coming back? Oh, God, no. Why? Why would you do this to me?
Not like this.
Good luck is what I would say to Kim. Surely she's going to win this match. She always wins.
We'll see. I mean, probably not. But this field, Boris Bianca is there as well. Svitolina's there. Should be great tennis to watch. Okay, this is Ness real tennis now. We can get to Royal Talk, our royalty segment. Emma Raducanu and Kate. What is her title? Kate Middleton Bush? What's her? Is she a princess? What's the deal here?
She's a duchess, isn't she? Duchess okay. of something?
Cambridge?
That's Sussex right. was. Cambridge, that's right. Sussex is the other ones, right?
Right.
I don't know.
How do I know that? Jeez Louise.
Duchess of Cambridge. That seems accurate. Sure.
So they met up. What happened? What was this? I saw basically it was like kind of honoring, because not only Emma Raducanu, but they did. UK had some great performances across in the wheelchair sports as well.
Dev, you know what's funny about this? I pride myself on keeping up with tennis news. I saw brief bits of this and I just did not care. I know it's bad for saying someone who's recording a podcast. I know that Raducanu and Kate Middleton met up. I don't know what the event was, but
the only job. Reason, can I just explain? The only reason I'm bringing this up is because you mentioned this to me, and now you pretend like it didn't move the needle for you. This is, that's fair. I think. It looks like Kate can play. Obviously, again, this is not doing well for our tennis for the everyman sport idea, but turns out Kate Middleton probably had some time to get really good at tennis because she's got a forehand. It looks like it can move.
Let me throw this question back at you in a different direction, right? If Emma Raducanu wanted to move the needle in tennis to a more everyman, everywoman, workman-like, who would be the celebrity that she should go and have a hit with
after
getting off the plane?
Does it have to be a UK-based celebrity? Probably. Well,
I guess
right?
Ashley also Probably. Asked the question of whether or not it should be a celebrity in general if we're trying to break down yeah. class barriers here.
Right. Like go to
what
the
about
NHS.
Adele.
Adele. I'm trying to... I love Ian Wright. I mean, yeah, I know he's a footballer, but Ian Wright, if they did something, that'd be cool. I think, you know, yeah.
I got it.
Yeah.
She should go and hit with Marcus Rashford. There you
Actually,
go.
Actually, you know There's what? Yeah. Sadly, not sadly, that would be cool, but I feel like that is already in the works. The cynic in me feels like that is being planned instantly by somebody behind the scenes. I mean, the whirlwind continues. She sacked her coach, though, Bush. I think that was pretty surprising. I think what has happened, though, is that she ended her relationship with her coach after Wimbledon, and then she did a short-term agreement with her coach, who was an LTA guy for the US Open. She ended up winning, but now she's looking for a coach that's been on the tour, which sounds reasonable to me, but I think it still raised some eyebrows of her doing this. I'm curious what you think.
Would you say sacked?
I don't know if it's sacked. Amicable agreement? Yeah. It's not Dominic Thiem. That's not Dominic Thiem sacking his physio by text or not even. Not even text. I don't even know how he did that.
I don't think he talked to him, right? That's the rumor.
Seeing a guy super pissed, Dominic Thiem's physio. We'll talk about that. But yeah.
It's been an interesting one to follow this story, right? Because you will find many different people in the tennis Twitter sphere and around the LTA who were basically saying that this was just a temporary agreement and like a temporary coach who was looking after a player going to her first US Open. I don't think they ever accounted on her winning the whole damn thing and winning 10 matches. So.
Exactly. It's like, whoops, we won. So what do we do now? And I'm sure there was some huge conversations about that.
Oh, wait, you're actually really, really good. So maybe you should need a different coach to take you further in this journey because I didn't know what was going on and you're good. Maybe that's what happened.
I found the reaction very interesting because my initial reaction was concern. I'm like, uh-oh, here we go again. And then it took a couple of minutes to be like, wait a minute. Makes a lot of sense. Like the idea is you're in the top 30 now. You're going to have to back this ranking up. You're going to need someone who has been around the tour quite a bit. And coincidentally, and this is a coincidence, but Darren Cahill and Simona Halep's coaching relationship ended this week as well. And I wonder if Darren Cahill would be a great choice for Emma Raducanu.
I mean, talking about things being played out publicly over the internet, talking about heaps of praise being going back and forth over Twitter, it was quite the sight to see those two, the way they talked to each other. It seemed very respectful, didn't it? It seemed like two people that genuinely had a huge amount of warmth towards each other. It's nice to see.
You don't ever see the reply on Twitter, the earnest reply on Twitter from mega famous people. Like you saw Killer Cahill give someone a help where he replied with a very earnest message as well. You don't see that too often. It was good. I think it would make sense. It would make a lot of sense, but I'm sure there's a lot of coaches right now pitching to Emma Raducanu. And I think this is also what we saw in that Naomi Osaka documentary. That's what happens. Coaches pitch them. I'm sure they're getting pitched like crazy right now. And we need to get a coach on this pod, Bush, to talk about that element. We've got some things in the works, but I think that would be fascinating to delve into.
And that's right, ladies and gentlemen. Here at Open Era, we are also throwing a hat into the ring. So if the Raducanu camp wants to be in contact with us, we know what we're doing, right? We could figure it out. We can tour.
Stand on the baseline at all costs. There is no room, margin for error. If you move off the baseline, the relationship is done. Okay, that is the real tennis. When we come back to close up another Open Era, it's our parting shots coming up next. Welcome back to the Open Era podcast. It's that time again, Bush. Parting shots, rapid fire, what grinded our gears, what we liked, etc. Take the floor, sir.
Ostrava again returned this year with the 3 exclamation marks we've already pointed out on the back of the court. Very interesting, very cool design. And it led me to ask the question to you, Devang. If more tournaments did this and got a bit more creative for what they could write at the back of the court in terms of their slogans, what would you write at the back of the court?
It's a big question. And I want to clarify, I probably wouldn't do like a cafe style. You know, a cafe, they'll do the someone working there will do some art every day, a new design, kind of like a jokester, like haha, pun on bagels or tea or the like. I wouldn't do that. Just to confirm. It's all business. But I think I want to be concise though. Maybe, are you sure about this? I'd put, are you sure about this as the tagline for the players involved, the people watching it, the people watching in the stands. Are you sure about this? Do you want to be here? Just make them think about it.
Well, that got dark. I was trying to go in a jokey direction and you put it that way. See, I wrote down, I was going to write, please get vaccinated at the back of
that's also good. Also good, right?
Given the high propensity of players who are not vaccinated, I thought it would be a timely reminder to those at the back of the court. But it's interesting you mentioned the cafe, like, chalkboard thing where you have, like, someone who writes an arrow and says, left, a place to get good coffee, arrow forward, I don't know, bears or something.
Can I just say you describing cafe chalk art on a podcast might be one of the greatest things to happen on this show.
Thanks, man. I appreciate
arrow it. Arrow left. Did you see Jeremy Shardy talking about what happened to him after he got his COVID vax?
I did see this. I saw that he said it went badly for him. I must admit, I didn't follow up on the research to figure out whether or not he was just being Jeremy Shardy or whether or not there was actually some merit to it.
He's basically calling it for the rest of the season, saying he had an adverse reaction to the COVID shot he got sometime before the US Open and after the Olympics, I believe. Not to say people have had adverse reactions, but I also didn't feel the need to share this widely to all of my friends or tennis friends because get vaccinated. Let's continue on this mission.
Please.
Full stop.
Please get vaccinated.
Full stop.
That's my advice.
What else, Bush?
Serena Williams turned 40, I think this week, actually, maybe last week.
Today.
One of the things that
Sunday.
Oh, it was today. Goodness me, on Sunday.
So.
Really cool article written by Aaron Dodson in The Undefeated, which tracked Serena Williams' first endorsement deal with Puma. It's a really fascinating look into her being very young. I believe she was 16 when she signed that endorsement deal. And just all the different original fashion dealings that she has, some of the original designs that she had. If you're sort of a nut for that stuff and you're like me and find the insides of the business interesting when it collides with the fashion side of things and also a lot of the stuff to do with diversity or social issues as well, it's a really good piece. And I think in general, they're a very good outlet who obviously promote different voices in a way that usually the mainstream media don't do. So it's on my Twitter account. I retweeted it, as to the Open Air account. If you are interested in it, I suggest going to check it out.
Puma and Serena had some really cool stuff in the late 90s, early aughts that I think rocked the tennis establishment, like we're seeing some people try these days. But I think at the time, you're right, Bush, it was outside of the box. It was definitely ruffling the feathers of the establishment, and it looked cool as hell. There were colors that, frankly, people were scared of or maybe not traditional enough, but they popped, and also Serena was amazing. So it was an excellent partnership for sure.
Yeah, there's some really interesting quotes in it when the article is talking about how Serena Williams's outfit for Wimbledon had to go run past the approval committee, and Mr. Sheets, which is great. That's a great name. We are very concerned that Serena's outfits will be outside of the ethics of our organization. Ethics is a very interesting word here that's doing a lot of heavy lifting.
Please.
So if you want to read more about that, I suggest go and look in the article. It's there's some good stuff in there.
It's an excellent segue to your trip to Wimbledon then, sir. Tell us about the ethics of this tour and everything about it.
All right, so where do you want to start on this? The tour guide was fantastic. If you've not been to the museum at Wimbledon, I really do recommend it. There's some cool stuff to go and look at through the history of the sport. In a lot of ways, it's stuff that you don't really get the chance to dig into a lot of the time. So if you're in Southwest London, I suggest going down there. Now, actually, Wimbledon itself, I mean, Britain is tons of class problems all over the place, but you do sort of feel like you're in a place that you shouldn't be in, especially if you come from a working class or poorer background. You do get that sense when you're walking through all of the neighborhood on the way to the All England Club, into the private club. It does feel a bit like, ooh, am I a little above my station here at this point? But the grounds are great. It's a beautiful club. Tons of good stuff around there. The museum's great. The tour guide I was talking to when I was doing the tour of Court One itself had some pretty great nuggets, because she works there full time, and during the tournament she was stationed inside of the women's locker room. And so I was asking her, like, just some stories to sort of talk about what she had heard. And the thing that she said to me that resonated really heavily was like, people do not understand the mental weight of the sport until you see a locker room empty, except two young women sitting there, one triumphant and one like just crestfallen, oftentimes crying. And you and the outside world, they don't tend to realize how heavy this weight is. And a lot of the women, they just end up in the locker room just breaking down, because this means everything to play at this tournament. And it's not until you have someone who is a member of security, not security, but a member of the club inside of there revealing that to you, it's quite a stark realization of how difficult this sport is. Me also, just a quick nugget, me being the nerd I am, when she's giving the tour of court number one, I'm asking her questions about like, so do you roughly have an idea of what the court pace index is and what kind of grass is being used here? And has the court actually slowed down over the years? Like what are the ground staff tend to say about this?
Did she call security? Soon after? Did she call security immediately or wait a couple minutes?
Well, you know what the funny part was? Is that because all of the staff there are tennis players, she turns to me immediately and she says, yeah, I mean, the courts have got a bit slower, but the grass has always been cut to 0.8 millimeters. What you're actually talking about, sir, is the change in the type of grass to the ryegrass. I was like, fuck yeah, you know what you're talking about. Like, you know where I'm coming from on this. She was great. I had a really good time talking to her.
And you're starting that podcast with her called Grass Talk, correct? That's coming out next week.
Yeah, absolutely. It will go over the court pace index for the entire tour, week by week.
What was the coolest piece of memorabilia you saw at the museum?
It's a good question. It's interesting that we started this podcast talking about real and fake tennis. Like, real tennis is legitimately the name of a sport where lawn tennis came from. Like, I think it's still played in some parts of London and some parts of the more upper class segments of tennis. I think one of the things that stood out for me, I guess memorabilia-wise, just seeing the trophies is cool. But one of the things that really stood out to me was how long this sport has had some element of equality in it. And there's going to be women who are listening to this podcast, or people from diverse backgrounds, or, you know, people of color who are just going to laugh at me. And that's fine. I take that on board. But if you go back through the museum, like, tell me the sport of football and having women playing in tournaments the same as men in like 1912. Like, it doesn't exist, right? And this is not me taking a victory lap on the sport at all.
Yeah.
But like, it's quite interesting looking at the history of it and being like oddly proud that all the way back then, even at the heart of it, in this most aristocratic of sports, you have elements that actually made it the sport it is today. And there's a reason that we have equal prize money and there is an acceptance. And you have, for goodness sake, the women's finals attracting more viewership at the US Open than the men's final. And you can, we got into that this week on Twitter, and some of that happened news, didn't we, when we were talking about why that happened. But in general, looking through that museum, it was a good reminder of that this sport does have a good history with a lot of things that we like to align ourselves with.
So what you're saying, Bush, it's not all bad. It's not all trash.
It is not all trash. Yes, I fully endorse that statement.
Do you have anything else, Wimbledon-wise? I love it. Then I will offline pick your brain more. But anything else that you'll remember for the listeners?
I think tennis has so much rich history in the fashion world and so many cool stories that it doesn't do a good enough job in telling. And even walking through that museum of seeing players and seeing athletes, all of these issues that come to the fore in 2021, like the idea that tennis in the 1970s had a transgender athlete, like this existed already within the sport. Like, tennis already crossed that Rubicon before we had this conversation in 2020, 2021, and all the things that go in the Olympics and everything. Mm-hmm. This already happened inside of tennis. Like, it didn't go well, of course. And like, that was a conversation that had to be had within the sport. But things like that, and talking about like first black champions inside of a predominantly white sport, in, you know, first black winner on the women's side, all this sort of stuff. Like, it happens oftentimes decades before sports have its equivalents within North America and within Europe. So pretty interesting to look at the history of it.
On that note of nostalgia, even though this is a little more recent, at Tennis Talker on Twitter tweeted this over the weekend, the WTA 10 years ago today. I was going to try and stump you again, Bush, to see if you would have guessed who the number one was, but I think I was a bit taken aback to realize it was Caroline Wozniacki, but looking at some of the other names, number two, Sharapova, Azarenka, Zvonareva, Lina, Kvitova, who is still playing, Stozer, Schiavone, Clijsters, who is back, Bartoli, Petkovic, Yankovic, Radwanska, Serena Williams, Peng, Palivichenkova, who is still playing. It's very interesting to see who is still playing and the fact that a lot of them are. A lot of them are playing and playing well. I mean, Stan Stozer is winning doubles titles right now. It's awesome.
I was doing some digging a couple of weeks ago just to look at the women's and the men's side by side. I think there is 9 women who have held the number one ranking inside of the top 50 at the moment on the WTA side. That is not the case on the men's side, in case you were wondering.
Not at all. Not at all. Just to confirm. All right, Bush, a couple more quick hitters, tennis related.
One and only David Goffin, married this week. Hey. Very, very lovely blue suit. Piercing blue eyes. He looks great in that photo. It's his beautiful bride, lovely white dress, very traditional, I would say. We had Simona Halep getting married in that kind of awesome gold variation of the wedding dress.
Hard to top that.
It is hard to top, it's true. David Goffin went a bit more traditional. Having said that, very solid.
That's hope.
And indeed so. Two quick hitters. Did you see this Jannik Sinner quote from this week when he was asked about the ATP Tour Finals? Very transparent and very interesting.
I didn't see it, no, but I'm reading it now. And young man.
I'm not going to physically destroy myself with tournaments every week just to qualify for the ATP Finals. I'll do the tournaments I choose. I just think about improving myself. When did these kids get so damn responsible?
Kids these days,
so
right?
Damn.
I don't appreciate this at all. Also, let's be honest here. I wonder who will be at the ATP Finals. I wonder if this will have the same luster as the ones in the past have had. It will be in Turin, but who's going to be there? I mean, Novak playing at Indian Wells is a bit surprising to me, but will he play this tournament? I don't know. So I can kind of see what Jannik Sinner is saying. Also, I mean, it's a bit of a shame because I love the ATP Finals. It's one of my favorite tournaments. And I think it was the fact that it was at the O2 made it so much more of that case. It'll be a bit different that it's not there. And the fact the Laver Cup is going there, I like that. But I think it was just the atmosphere of that stadium, Bush, that was so unique in tennis that the Laver Cup has kind of been able to replicate.
I was down in Greenwich yesterday, just down by the O2, looking around. I was at the London Design Festival, which was kind of cool. The O2 in Greenwich, is obviously tons of work has gone into that area, but it's a good vibe to it. I'm kind of sad that I only ever got to see one more tour finals there. So we'll have to take a trip to Turin instead.
I did not see
Turin? Turin. Turin. Right?
I think it's Turin.
Turin.
Think, yeah. Turin. 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 I didn't see the ATP finals. I did see a FIFA competitive gaming event at the O2 as I was working there.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Two challenges remaining, Simon. We didn't talk about it last week because we had a guest who was not Canadian, but we had an election in Canada. You ducked it too, being out of the country. You didn't miss much, though. Nothing has changed. In fact, we are more bogged down now. How are you feeling about it?
I mean, you just hit the nail on the head, right? Like, literally nothing changed. It was kind of a big waste of time. Even, like, because I think in general, like, having elections at least gives in some capacity the opportunity for dialogue or for people to have to put forward platforms or manifestos that you can have a conversation about what the future of the country looks like and all this sort of stuff. I'm not really convinced we even got that this time. It all felt a little bit bollocks, which leads me to ask the question to you, Dev. Devang Desai, you have just been elected Prime Minister of Canada, first person of color. Congratulations.
No one believed in us. No one believed in us. We platformed a campaign in every riding across the country. And here we are, my friends. Here we are. We made it.
Huge majority. Unbelievable. Came out of nowhere. En Marche is Devang Desai.
I don't like your stuff. Now you're beginning to make me sound like a strong man. Like, this was legal. All of the proper things were done in terms of legality. I didn't manufacture this result.
We're not going to draw the parallels between Devang Desai and Emmanuel Macron, relation to his former school teacher. Anyway, moving on swiftly.
What? These accusations.
What are your first
three pieces of legislation or your first three actions as prime minister? Very curious to know.
I'm glad I saw this question in advance because I had to reckon with what is would be legislation or ideas, because I think ideas are shit and legislation is important. But I think I would replace first past the post immediately. That'd be what I would do first, so that we could have some, we could choose more than one thing on our freaking ballots. So I think I would go for what the NDP actually suggested this time around with mixed member proportional representation. Again, I don't know if this is an actual law I could, but I would have to get this in legislation, but immediate water access to the Indigenous communities in Canada that still are under drinking advisories, water advisories in their communities, which is just fucking insane. An elimination of fossil fuels, tax the rich, annex the American side of Niagara Falls. And I would probably, I don't know what I'd do with the PPC, but that whole shit makes my blood boil. So I don't know, something along those veins. But these are some of the things I will do in within my first 60 days of office, Simon.
I think it's really interesting, right? Because I'm obviously in Britain and it's conference season here as well. So the politics game is sort of ratcheted up a lot. And I think asking this question, despite us obviously doing it tongue-in-cheek to a certain capacity, it does force you to reckon with what your actual political beliefs are, of what you're not, what you're actually for, and what you're not just against entirely in mm-hmm. principle, right? And mm-hmm. it's when I worked in politics, that was always the thing that I asked people when they complained about things. Like you're allowed to complain. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, you can be upset at the way that the government's responding or handling everything. But it's always a question that I made sure that I asked, which was, like, what do you want the future to look like? Like, what is your vision for what this country or your community looks like? Like, what would benefit you directly? And can you just tell me, like, two or three things that would really help your community or your family out? Because when you put it in that capacity, it forces people to actually think about like the political system and the ways that works, and that you have to write legislation to get it passed. So yeah, despite all the joking around, I would encourage people to do that, because it sure as shit didn't happen during this election. So if you can take away from our silly little podcast and discussions about politics, like, just ask yourself to write down on the back of a napkin somewhere, you're elected, what are the three things? What are the three pieces of policy that you would do instantly, and how would it help?
And how? How is the big thing? I think what I found, like, just reading various things ahead of this election and then the aftermath, is like a lot of promises are obviously made, but it's very little written on the how, or how things are budgeted, and some of the parties not releasing their budgeting plans till the very end. I just, some dumbassery, Bush. A really stupid campaign is over, and JT's around for a few more years. C'est la vie, okay. Lil Nas X, Bush in London. Tell me about it.
Well, one of the things that's fun when you're touring, and because I'm by myself, right? Like, if I'm traveling around London, so I'm having the opportunity to listen to a hell of a lot of podcasts, hell of a lot of music, and hell of a lot of audiobooks. So I got through a bunch of stuff, including the Lil Nas X album, which the newer Montero, which came out, is great. I've spoken on this podcast before about, I think he's an interesting kid and someone that I think we need to protect in some capacity, even though he's done some dumb stuff in his life, of course. But in general, he seems like a pretty positive influence out there. So I recommend listening to the album. I also listened to a bunch of Troye Sivan stuff, which I hadn't listened to a huge amount, but man, that kid's talented as well. Some good stuff out there, especially in that pop scene.
Fantastic. That album's just a lot of hits. So many hits, and very good like active workout music. In that vein, I'm going to shout out the Chemical Brothers, because I love them and I just stopped, or not stopped, but I maybe just went away from them for a while. And through the magic of Shuffle, I started listening to a shitload of the Chemical Brothers. And I'm back in. I'm looking at the world in ones and zeros right now, Bush, but the Chemical Brothers is life. And I love that band. I love the video for Star Guitar as well. That is it for me, man. Are you done? Are you going to be back home soon? Safe travels, please.
I forgot to mention at the top, like, so didn't get on the flight. Went back into London, booked a hotel for a night just to gather my thoughts together. I was like, okay, I'll just do two more days in London and I'll come home. Get to my hotel booking the next night. Sorry, sir. Booking.com, who you book the hotel through, Ashley just cancelled your booking. I know it's 5:30 on a Saturday and Anthony Joshua is fighting two blocks away from here, but actually you don't have a hotel now. So kiss my ass and get out of here. What an end to my week.
What a was absolutely remarkable. My God. Me being thousands of miles away was incensed. And Anthony Joshua got destroyed as well, just to cap it. At Spurs Stadium, which, well, if you know, you know. Okay. Well, safe travels, sir. We are anxiously awaiting your turn. Thank you for soldiering through and managing to get through this, because I'm glad we talked about what we did and rehashed the Laver Cup. A big thank you as well, of course, to producer extraordinaire Dylan Wilson for his mastery of the ones and twos. A reminder, we are on patreon.com/openera. Join us there. Get on the Discord. We are talking tennis all the time. You get the show ad-free as well if you sign up there. I think we just had a couple of new people join our Patreon, which is awesome. We'll get their names. I only just saw the numbers, so I will get your names and shout you out for sure. But thanks. It helps get this show made. So please join us on Patreon, and a rating or a review wherever you get this podcast would also be great for us in terms of getting this into more people's ears. We got a really nice email, Bush, this week. One of those emails that keeps us going and makes us feel really good. Isabel Waters, thank you so much for that note. Meant the world. But yeah, we'll be back next week, as always, for the Open Air Podcast. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon.